thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to That Great Business Show, episode 28, posting on the 2nd of April, 2021. I'm Conal O'Moran. On this episode, we have an absolute cracker. If our always unedited chat goes to plan in just an hour, you'll hear more great business ideas than you'll ever be able to thank us for. They're not our ideas, but those of an absolute legend of Irish business, a person who has had business interests ranging from drinks, drugs, diamonds, and even ladies' tights. That's all in a minute. But first, I'll start with a huge thank you to all of you for making episode 27 our biggest ever. And obviously, that's down to our great guests and our great stories. But I also have to give a shout out to our friends at Renatus, who kindly circulated the podcast to their extensive mailing list on Sunday. And as I mentioned a couple of times on episode 27, if you are nosy about business, and of course you are, that's why you listen to us, Ireland's best business podcast, you should make sure to get onto the free Renatus.ie weekly newsletter mailing list posted every Sunday. And please remember that Great Business Show is made possible by that great shaving oil company, DeFacto. For men and women, it's the best anyone can get.
That Great Business Show.
And so to my guest, Dr. John Teeling. I've read one description of John as being a throwback to another age, a swashbuckling intellectual. That's a description I like. I've known Dr. John since his days lecturing in UCD. He wasn't teaching my course, but I always bunked into his lectures because I enjoyed them so much. He is and was pure entertainment. I've met, interviewed and chatted with John many, many, many times over the years. And about 2 years ago, I had him down at his son's distillery, the Teeling Distillery in the centre of Dublin, to speak at an Irish International Business Network, or IIBN, event. It was fascinating to see the reaction of business people to him on that night. He was like a rock star, with a 20-deep queue waiting to have a chat with him after his talk, asking him for his always forthright views on what he thought of their big business ideas. His stories of gold mining, Cooley Distillery, Glen Abbey Tights, and even a sweeps business are well documented elsewhere. So, as we do business differently here on That Great Business Show, I've asked Dr. John to talk to us for about an hour about all those business ideas that he thinks are great, but that he hasn't the time to develop or deliver himself. It's a Team GBS Business Development Masterclass with the master himself. Dr. John Teeling, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much. I like the idea of swashbuckling intellectual. That sounds about right.
I was one of the Irish Independent or something called you that. I like that as well.
Guy. Yeah.
Now, there's one in my little bit of research. I learned something new about you. There's always something new every day, isn't there? I've only just learned how close you and your businesses are to Solidarity People Before Profit TD, Richard Boyd Barrett.
Yeah, that's an unusual one. David Boyd Barrett, who's Richard's father, worked in Northgate, Irish Base Metals in Clontarf, and he was the one who actually hired me as a consultant in 1969.
That was your first job?
Outside of UCD. I'd been in UCD for 9 months, was going to have to leave because £19 a week wasn't great even then. And they gave me a job doing financial analysis. And to this day, that was 1969, I'm in the same room. So 52 years later in the
same
room.
And I think he still owns the property, or does he? Or?
He doesn't. No, he worked for them. It was owned by the company at that stage. I never bought it. I continued to rent it.
And I'm sure there's a reason, a good business reason for that.
I don't like property. Simple as that. No other reason.
Did you ever sit down and work out how much you have overspent on that property in through rent?
No, because I would have probably that wouldn't go down that well. So we're there. Well, now I only have been paying rent since about 85, because up to then I was working as consultant to the mining companies that were there at that stage.
1985, you're talking about. That's just a few years ago. So, you know, you've been doing this
for
a while.
It is, yeah.
What drives you?
What drives me?
Mm-hmm.
Good question. Always something new. It's the hunt. It's not the kill or anything like that. It's to see, can you do certain things and can you achieve? I think I've always been like that. And I still have opportunities and challenges. And as long as I do, and as long as I can do them, I'll continue to do that.
You've had a spectacular success, obviously, with the whiskey, but that was a long time in the making.
I think most spectacular overnight successes are a long time in the making.
Well, actually, you know, myself and Peter Rice, the sound engineer, were laughing about this. There's another whiskey manufacturer called Conor McGregor.
Yes, there is.
Who did it in about 6 months.
Yeah, well, I don't know about 6 months, but that is spectacular. All right, that's just to make me feel worse. Thank you very much. Yeah, the whiskey was the project written in 1970, started in 87, lost money for 10 years, really didn't pick up till about 2005. So it was
what
a changed? Long time. Young people started to drink brown spirits.
Why?
Fashion, chase, taste, they changed. They wanted more taste. They were sick of... Also, young people don't like the drink their parents drank.
So their fathers used to drink Paddy and
No, their
Jameson
grandfathers, their great-grandfathers, not their fathers. The Irish whiskey is now drunk by 22 to 39s. All over the world, it's remarkable. Now, you still have... So in some countries, you have two quite separate markets. You have the older market for the guys who like the more expensive whiskey, sit up at the bar. And then you have the younger market, which is entry-level products, which Jameson does brilliantly, which want bourbon, Japanese, and Taiwanese whiskey, as well as Irish, but not Scotch blend.
You obviously have sold out very happily to, that was the Cooley Distillery.
Yeah.
But you're still big, very big in whiskey.
I think we're the second biggest in the country now again. That was a surprise to me. It genuinely was a surprise.
Explain exactly what you do. You bulk.
You must have 85% of whiskey is a blend. Despite, you know, all the photographs and things you see of these beautiful little pot still, copper pot stills and people selling malt whiskey. Very few people, maybe 15% of people drink malt whiskey because it tends to be more expensive and much stronger tasting. A grain distillery, which is big columns, is really like a big chemical plant. It's not fancy or nice at all. And there was only Irish Distillers was the only one. And that was the key to the success of Cooley. We realised that in the beginning and we set up a small column distillery, still operating at the same size in Cooley. And when we sold to Beam Suntory, it was going to go back to a situation where there was Irish Distillers who weren't going to supply you. Why should they? And Beam was going to be, they didn't want to do it either. So Jack and Stephen, my sons, decided they wanted to go for branded high-end premium whiskey, which they've succeeded brilliantly. And they built a pot still operation in Newmarket, which I'm sure some of your listeners have been to.
And I have been to.
Yeah.
And it is so well worth going to. It is not just another trip. I learned so much. It was fantastic.
Yeah,
with the big fire in
job.
Dublin and, you know.
Yeah, they've done a great job. And it's all young, as you noticed.
Yes, I did.
Everybody's young.
Really keen young guys.
Yeah, and they're great. But they still needed to be a supply of grain whiskey. So I was blessed and lucky. Diageo were selling off their Irish breweries and putting the whole lot into James's Gate. And there was one in Dundalk, which was 13 acres, where every bottle of Harp in the world was made.
I was going to say, the old Harp brewery.
Every single bottle in the world was made there. And they moved it to James's Gate and I bought the plant. And into that, we have put a big grain distillery. And then because, again, serendipity, a lot of things, as you know, in business are serendipity, there were three beautiful old copper kettles that they'd brewed in. Beautiful, big, but beautiful. And we adapted them and changed them into pot stills. So we're now a very big malt distiller and grain distiller. But the fascinating thing is we thought we'd have maybe 20 or 30 customers, mainly to supply people who are selling their own malt and wanted a blend to go with it. Now, instead of that, we have about 200 customers who are supplying large quantities on four separate sections to a large, good part of the world now. We probably supply about 75% of the smaller companies. And some of them we supply both their malt and their grain.
You know the ones, the little fellas that you're talking about around Ireland who do the lovely photographs and all the rest? They're all buying from you, aren't they?
They may be only buying their grain. Many of them have small distilleries. And almost, in fact, I could say all of them, I'm sure there's one or two aren't, but have their own special brands anyway. I have a very good general manager.
Their own brands or blends?
Sorry, blends. They'd have their own blends. So each one will be slightly different. And what Irish whiskey has been really good at is against Scotch. Real Irish is very good in adapting within the technical file or the EU file on it and to give different a choice of different blends, different woods, different ages, and different finishes. And I think that our team have been really good at that. So if you want your own whiskey, we can give you a whiskey which would be unique to you.
You started selling to me again, you are.
If you have money.
I mean, are you pitching at me?
Again, if you have money.
Which I don't, so therefore...
Oh, well then, okay. Well, then we can pass on, yeah.
So I know the history of your interest in whiskey, even though famously you're a teetotal, but the other areas of your interest, mining. Like, you've been mining around the place for a long time, I think, and I think you disagreed with me on this, but I think I remember you showing me little bits of... gold from the Sperrin Mountains 100 years ago. When
yes.
Yeah, but I'm still waiting for the gold mine to appear in the Sperrins.
Now, it's likely to be the first big gold mine in Ireland, yes. There's been gold in plenty places in Ireland. You can get it in the rivers. You get it famously.
Wicklow. Avoca,
Wicklow, yeah. Exactly. Avondale, Charles Stewart Parnell mined
where
gold.
Where I panned for gold
yes,
myself.
And he did and got enough to make a ring for Kitty O'Shea.
Well, I got sweet nothing. I got a cold.
Yeah, well, I'm no good at panning anyway, so if it wanted to jump up and bite me.
But where in the name of, you know, did you start saying, oh, let's go mining?
Very simple. Again, serendipity. I was working in Irish Base Metals in Clontarf as a consultant, and they were the ones that discovered Tara. But then with all the problems in the early 70s of title and ownership and state agreement.
Which is only just resolved, maybe, is it a year or 2 years ago?
It took a few, I went on forever. And it kind of destroyed a lot of people.
Was the Beulah
was the other side of it, yeah. And then there was problems with the states, the Resources Protection Group, which was Pat Rabbit as a student at a Galway. And, you know, we were selling our birthright. Nothing has changed. You see the same now in the Corrib. But then there was a big collapse in exploration in Ireland. And there were some very good people, really good geologists with most modern techniques. And I thought there was an opportunity in the late 70s. And myself and Donald Kinsella at the time, we set up an operation to look at recovering silver. Because Bunker Hunt had just driven the price up to $50 an ounce. It's nowhere near that, less than half that now, to recover silver from the tailings. You know, the dumps in silver mines didn't work. And then we set up another small company in the early 80s that started to invest, but early stage, high risk prospecting exploration. And that was successful. That one of its successes was Conroy, which became Archon.
Yeah.
And Kenmare, which we set up for £33,000. It's now about... I don't know, a couple of billion, but we're long gone and diluted to nothing. But it's the fifth biggest titanium mine in the world now in Mozambique.
It's a game.
It's a very high risk game.
Yeah.
If you're at the stage we're at, which is early stage, if I had more sense and was starting again, I would follow a model by a fellow called Lucas Lundeen. He bought when others got into trouble. And he's built a huge conglomerate of mining companies. So he let other people find it. Actually, much like the pharma companies. You know, when the guys discover it and then they're getting stuck on phase three trials costing 10 or 15 million, they come in and buy it. And say, mining is exactly the same.
Perfect segue into all of these ideas that you shared with us then at the IIBN that you just don't have time to do because you are an exceptionally busy person. You sent me your resume, 4 pages long.
I told you you were not interested to refer to that.
So what would you do? Listeners to this podcast, I've told them or we've told them that you're going to give them a masterclass in great ideas.
Oh, lovely. You know, sorry for their troubles.
No,
I'll focus a bit because of the areas I'm closest to. And some of the things that are going to happen there, some of you know of them, is called LONO. LONO is either low-cal or no-cal, no alcohol. Alcohol. So in other words, you're making whiskey with no alcohol in it or very low alcohol in it. You see gins at the moment, no alcoholic gins, and you see beers which are very successful. I think it's coming in the whiskies. They're having trouble getting the flavours right and you won't be able to call it whiskey or things like that, but they'll handle it. That's what people want and that's going to happen. I'd look at it whether or not we'd go into it. That's a big jump mentally and corporate culture-wise to start to do things like that. But I think it will happen. The second part...
Are you doing that kind of research here yourselves? No,
it just comes. And if you, as I always did, I always read the literature. Always kept as up to date. I'm not as good as I was.
But it must be easier now with the internet, or is it just too much?
Yes, I mean, in fact, I'll talk about something in a second on that very thing. Yes, but you still need to have somebody to, if you like, you're skimming around and you see something saying, that's interesting. Now, I've been watching this no alcohol spirits for a while. Seedlip is one that many of your listeners would know. Which Guinness.
Seedlip.
I think it's the most awful taste because I can drink that. Something is dreadful. And but there are quite a number of them coming in. A lot of companies are doing it. I think it will happen. So that is one area. Allied to that, I think you know, is I think over the next 5 or 10 years, you're going to see cannabis. You may not have noticed yesterday, the New York state allowed cannabis into that. Where Biden has said he wants to decriminalize cannabis.
And tax it, you can be sure. There will be roads all
it'll
over.
Be, tobacco and alcohol. Is it any different?
Yeah, none whatsoever.
Possibly less dangerous. So that's something that will happen. Whether I will be, you know, in terms of, it's still probably 5 to 10 years. I spent a long time looking at that. I think, you know, that spent good money. The legislation in Europe is extremely
difficult. Never inhaled.
No, I certainly never inhaled. No. You're talking to me. It didn't really exist. You see, you're a generation younger. I mean, you didn't know about this when you were students. 50,
Bill Clinton
60 years.
Never inhaled either, but it would go with
Kuwait. Yeah, so that would be one that will happen. The cannabis as a product is certainly going to happen here. People swear by CBD, which is the product that doesn't have any of the hallucinogenics in it.
We had a guy called Fergus Kerrigan on one of the episodes here of the podcast, and he has a company called Ethos CBD. So he's
the problem with it in Europe is I couldn't get a product that would go to humans. You can have it for cats and dogs and things like that, and for cosmetics, but anything that was going to be ingested, I think breaches European laws at the moment and requires a thing called novel foods anyway, which is a couple of years and expensive. They have to rationalise it. It's a mess, and they will, but and then people will go into it at that stage. Whether Ireland is suitable for growing it, I was more interested in the processing. And if you would have, say, either CBD or THC-infused spirits, which I think there's already a couple of them in Canada. So that will happen in that particular area. Probably not as exciting as the other ones. The other areas where, again, close to what I do would be...
But you do so much.
No, I really don't. I might have, but not as much as I used to. Would be related to mining. One of the very big long-term trends, whether we like it or not, and we've been fighting cats and dogs against it, is getting away from fossil fuels. I mean, this is like a broken record. And though if you wanted to make money, I suspect one of the things you could do is buy shares in the three or four big companies because they're going to generate so much cash over the next 20 or 30 years, much like the tobacco companies. They've been the very best investments in terms of dividends of any of the companies. Now, they're fading now. But if you get 30 years of high investments or high dividends, that's very good. I think that'll happen to the Shells and the BPs and the Exxons.
But they are ploughing an awful lot of that cash into renewables.
Yes, they are. And they want to... Exxon is staying in the background. And Exxon is ploughing a lot of money into fossil fuels, which are still needed anyway. And
so would you choose Exxon over the other ones?
Yes.
Okay.
I would. Now, we should all be choosing BP because it's an Irishman, isn't it? Looney is running
there is,
it. He's in boss of it now. Yeah. And very, very, very... extremely smooth and a very good presenter. Young man, his 40s, very, very good presenter. So that's just as an investment. But what's going to happen as to how do you get away from fossil fuels? And the area that we had done are still that I liked and I haven't been able to get into it yet is in Ireland in particular for wind energy, which will be big. The trouble with it doesn't always blow when you want it. Mm-hmm. And we all know that. So if you rely on wind energy, as they had recently in the UK, and unless you have backup storage, when the wind doesn't blow, if there's a cold spell and there's a big match on television, you could have problems unless you have backups. So we had looked at a group, the closure of the two power stations in on the Shannon there recently, and we proposed putting in large arrays of lithium-ion batteries to have battery storage. Technology is not great on it at the moment. We didn't get past the first and a half review, I think maybe the second review, because I think the ESB decided that this was a very good idea that they would look at themselves, which it is.
But were they kind of piggybacking on the interest of John Teeling?
No. I'd love to think that, but it's not true. I think they're well able to look at it themselves. Far better than we were able to look at it. But it's a no-brainer because you have the building in place, you have your planning, and you have the transmission lines right there, which is a major thing. And so what you would do when the wind blows, you'd power up the batteries. When the wind goes down, you take the power out. I had looked marginally at with a group that didn't do so well out of looking at the the salt caverns up in the north, where you would do the same thing. Is what you would do is you would pump air, compressed air into it when there was a lot of wind energy, too much wind energy by it for nothing. And then you would reverse the turbines and let the electricity out when it was scarce.
And does it work? No.
Again, it was a very clever idea. Maybe before its time. It's working in a few places, but there will be alternatives. That's the only area I've got. I missed out on the collapse in prices of solar, the whole solar technology. And we're looking at a project in the Kalahari where currently it's operating with, this is for Botswana Diamonds, where there are six large agricultural generators using diesel fuel to generate power. And the problem with it is nothing to do with that. That's grand, except the last 60 kilometres is through deep sands. And so getting these large petrol tankers or diesel tankers through is a horrendous job, absolutely horrendous job. When it's too dry and the sand blows, it's bad. And if it happens to rain, it's all mush. So that's a good place for solar. And if we go much further, we would put solar panels into it. We'd have to, and then have maybe one backup generator. So that is an area there that you would have to look at. The other areas that I'm quite active on at the moment would be in providing the metals for these new technologies. Now, if you look at batteries, you're looking for cobalt and lithium. And all both of those two are not so much in scarce supply, but in difficult supply. Cobalt, because most of it comes from the DRC and is very badly mined. It comes as a byproduct.
You're receiving the Democratic Republic of Congo.
The Congo.
Just because you're up and down there all the time. That we're not.
No,
always.
I was. No more. it's an interesting one. I think we'll probably go more grassroots and have a look at, there are cobalt licenses historically. I think we're looking at getting a basic cobalt license and do some prospecting work on it for cobalt.
This is in the DRC now?
No, the DRC is too difficult even for me to work in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does that mean politically?
Yeah, well, also, the rule of law doesn't work.
Yeah.
There's no title. And even if there is title, it suits only as long as it suits them. Now, other more sophisticated countries aren't any better. I'm not so sure Ireland has been any better with suddenly wiping out the exploration licenses and all that kind of stuff. It's exactly the same. You know, you spend tens of millions and they say, no, we don't like that. And they just stop it. So that would be cobalt. The lithium is more interesting in that the biggest source of lithium in the world is in the salt pans in Bolivia, where we'd worked for about 30 years. And David Hauger, my colleague, is involved in that. And we have proposals in with the government there, which is the socialist government, to try and look at these so-called salars. Technology-wise, there are some impurities in the lithium, but 60% of all the world's lithium is in these salt pans. Minor weakness, and that's at 15,000 feet. So there's no air, there's no water, there are no roads.
It's always a problem, isn't it?
Yes. That's, of course, why it hasn't been exploited. But I think we could probably do that.
Let me just stop you there, because I'm going to interrupt you, because as we are a commercial business, we need this to pay the bills.
Connobio, Er That Great Business Show. Looking for the best work-life balance? Why not start your new business life in one of Ireland's beautiful Gaeltacht locations? Údarás na Gaeltachta has created Ireland's biggest digital hub, G-Tech. High-speed broadband just for you. Hosail Noah Fnachlat. Your new work-life awaits. Find out more at udaras.ie. You're listening to That Great Business Show. ThatGreatBusinessShow.com.
You're listening to a special edition of That Great Business Show with our guest, Dr. John Teeling. John, so many ideas there. I can't believe that you're also running a businesses. I was going to say a business, but businesses. Who does your research?
I'm not as good at that as I used to. I used to do a lot of it myself when I was an academic. Students used to help. Now, that's a long, long time ago.
Do you mean that you used the students to...
No, use probably the wrong word. But they would inform themselves and me. Now, that's the stage when I was really involved in the stock exchange rather than anything else. And of course, in the 60s and early 70s, access to data wasn't so good. But what we would do is we would have a network of people who, and the various things on the lithium, we have an expert lithium guy who works with us, and David Hogan looks after that. On the cobalt, we use some of our colleagues out of South Africa. We're looking at another one called Rare Earths in Saudi Arabia, which could be very interesting. you know, the rare earths are even more difficult than cobalt or lithium because it's what the American spacecrafts and all the American fighters, they all need rare earths. And those rare earths are 80% controlled by the Chinese. And the only two significant processing plants in the world are both in China. So that's a kind of a weakness for the US. But the problem with rare earths, they tend to come with uranium, which is not such a nice thing. But there's the possibility from things like Landsat imagery and using satellites that there could be somewhere under the sands in Saudi Arabia, a big deposit of rare earths.
Going full circle, am I right? And do I remember correctly that gold in Sperrins, but was there somebody talking about uranium up there as well?
There was at one stage. You're absolutely right.
Hey, not just a pretty face.
Up in the Donegal granites.
That went to nowhere either.
It wasn't viable, like the 99% of these. The Sperrins gold is going to be a big 100,000 ounce a year gold mine.
John,
not mine.
The only, and you and I disagree about this, the only reason that I'm a wee bit sceptical is that I remember both you and Peter McAleer and other people who were big in the mining industry back then showing me gold, and that was quite some years ago.
Absolutely right. I owned that deposit in the Sperrins with a fellow called John Carney in the late 80s. And the problem at that stage was...
He was big in Canadian exploration.
He still is.
He still is.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. It hasn't changed. He's still doing the exact same. It's still prospecting. We're still looking. And the problem then was it was politically a difficult area. It was right on the border. And you couldn't use explosives. And mining without explosives is an oxymoron.
Yeah.
But very good gold there. Since that time, it's a company called Alradian now. A Canadian-owned private company, was public, is now privately owned, worth a lot of money. They have a huge deposit there. They're now, having got over the political situations, they're in the kind of environmental situations, and they're playing that game. But I think that will become a mine. There still is. If you look at, there are a number of Irish companies now prospecting for gold in Ireland. That particular gold you saw from the Sperrins, close to that is the whole Fermanagh, Monaghan area where Richard Conroy is prospecting.
And has been
again for the other 25 or 30 years. This is not a short term. Even if you find it takes 10 years.
But it's always promised as well. Listen, we'll move away from
We sell to shareholders. We sell mystery and not history.
Yeah.
Hope, not reality. That's what we sell.
You heard it here first. Hope, not reality.
Yes.
So it ain't going to happen. Well, okay, we won't go there. What you are talking about, though, is what we'll call big ticket possibilities. Any ideas, smaller, more easier to access businesses that, do you remember in your lectures used to, do you remember your lectures? I hope you do. Used to always intrigue me, but say, now, if I were doing this, you'd say, and go into this and do that. Something accessible for the listeners.
I was thinking about that as I drove here this afternoon. And at that particular time, I hadn't any money, not much more money than the students. So all you could do is small ticket items. You had to start small. And now I'm probably not the very best because, as I said, you're thinking of bigger things.
But your brain keeps looking at things.
If you played poker when you were in college, you know, you lost a couple of pounds or a couple of euros, it was bad. Now you wouldn't dream of playing a game like that. It has to excite you. It has to make you interesting. So a very small investment is not something I would do. But
having just said
I haven't. I actually was trying to think of it because it was a good, it's a fair question. If you're talking about
textiles starting, and you've did it a few times in the past.
Yeah, lots, seven.
And didn't work.
Doesn't work in Ireland unless it's highly specialised. And even then I have my worries about it. That was a very simple model. It was a Benjamin Graham model of buying companies that were undervalued. In theory, you held the shares until they went up to what the estimated value was according to a model and you sold them. It was easy to buy them in Ireland. It wasn't so easy to sell them. And the Irish Stock Exchange hasn't improved since then. We tried it. We tried to develop Glen Abbey. It didn't work. They're all gone now because of labour.
Now, tell me the story. Tell listeners the story about Glen Abbey, if it's the one I remember.
Which one? There are a few.
There was the one where the IDA, if it was the IDA at the time, who decided to set up a rival plant next door to you or something like that. Was that...
That's one of the good ones, probably. No.
I thought that all your employees walked across the street to better employment, or no?
No, we never had. We had 1,200 people.
I've dined out on that story many times.
Keep doing it. It sounds good to me. I'm not sure, but as I wiped it from my mind. I'm not sure.
So tell me about the great failures of your time.
I have not had many great failures. Because what you tend to do, and I suspect anybody who's been in business or has set up their own businesses realizes this, you have to adapt. I prefer the word adapt to pivot. I hate that word pivot.
We love a pivot.
I know. I don't like it at all. You have to do what you have to do to change. So many of the things I have been involved in end up quite different from where they started. And you can be sure, I mentioned to you there, like lithium and cobalt, that would go into a company called Arkel that specializes in zinc and gold exploration.
Why did you choose Arkel, name of a fine horse?
It was called Connemara, but the epic on the stock exchange was CON, and Con didn't look so good for an Irish exploration company.
Okay.
And then they picked Arkel because it came up first on the list, A. That was the reason they picked it.
Love those
not
stories.
Not me. I was happy enough with Connemara. Nobody else
was. Do you remember in the old phone book, it used to be, you know, AAA Teeling or whatever.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Well, that was the same logic. Thinking, yeah, same logic on that. And so they tend to change. In terms of the two biggest potential failures, have any ones that actually closed down? I'm sure I have. I really am. I must have out of 25 or 30 of them. But a lot of them have come up as mining companies, exploration companies tend to go dormant and they get like the phoenix, but they come back and the initial shareholders get diluted to hell. I mentioned Ken Mayer. I think ultimately now 1,000 shares have probably become one. So that's what happens, but they never die fully. As I say, that's all the exploration companies that don't find anything.
Of which there are many.
The vast bulk. But yeah. Remember, we've had about three hits. If you had bought African Diamonds with me when we listed, you would have made 100 times your money.
That's all right.
Yeah. And I was with Tara. Tara went from 2 and 6 in real money to $50.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the biggest zinc discovery in the 20th century. Yeah, yeah. It should have. Now, I was a worker there. And we had Archon did very well. It went up about 20 times. But you could normally, if you're successful and if you take your profit, if you hold on to the shares, then go right back to a cent.
And in taking a profit, what do you base that on? I mean, put your finger in the air?
No,
or?
I have my son Stephen and Jack, we would have followed this Ben Graham model, which was very explicit, is that it was you bought into a company where the net assets per share were higher than the market price. And when it got to that price, you sold.
Okay.
So I was very good at selling. Everybody is a very good buyer, by the way. Everybody listening here is an excellent buyer. There are almost no good sellers. Almost none. And I wanted on my tombstone, the epitaph was, he sold too soon. That's what I wanted. Always leave a few bob in it for the next guy. Now, this is great advice. Do I follow it now? No. I did for a long time. I was very good at it. I would sell. I never minded leaving a bit. It's very hard to know when to sell. Greed is a powerful motor. GFG, you can figure out what, greed. It's a powerful motivator. And we also, no matter how professional you are, no matter the best investors, they still fall for it. I know some who don't, who go out and then say, I sold too soon, as they pocket 20 times their money. And you can usually sell when the price is going up. Very hard to sell when it's going down. Donald Kinsley explained to me once how this was to people. What our business is like is if ever you've seen something, there's a movie where they're going over the desert and suddenly they see the bar is there. Yeah. And so suddenly the bar is there and you're dying of thirst and you can all pile into the bar and there's free beer. And you drink all the beer you want and you keep drinking, but you can't get out that way. You have to get out the back to go to the John, but there's a little tiny door, a little small door that you have to get out. And it's very hard to get out. Easy to get in, very hard to get out.
That was an old term in stockbroking, a big rush for a small door.
Yeah. This is, and it happens. We all suffer from it. And you see, it's people buy on the greater fool theory. They know it's not sustainable, but I'll sell to somebody else.
And do you ever look at when you're talking about 20 times or even 100 times your money, that's small beer compared to some of the vast amounts of money.
Unbelievable.
Do you ever look at Amazon or Facebook? Yeah. Or do you understand them?
I have an awful problem understanding this. Now, remember, I used to teach finance, so I'm supposed to understand it.
I remember that.
I'm looking at the top 20 unicorns that are either listed or not listed. The Stripes of this world, but Stripe being number one. And the second one is Tesla. And there's another S that's the top 20. Not one of them is making a profit. Not one of them. And
so you used to write books about this kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, but how, you know, the value of a share is the present value of the sum of all future dividends, not cash flow, all future dividends. When are these guys going to pay dividends? Now, I mean, the price of Amazon, I don't know what's going up. You would have made 12,000 times your money or something beyond that.
A lot of money.
Beyond belief. And
but you're talking about, you know, the few future dividends. You're selling the same with your mining.
Very few dividends. Except if you had bought African Diamonds, mm-hmm. it was bought out, and now it's that the Karowe mine is probably the fifth best diamond mine in the world. It paid a lot of big dividends at one stage. It paid one dividend, which was 500% the entry price we had paid to get in. That's not bad for you.
That's not bad.
No. But then now they've stopped paying the dividends and they've gone back because they're going to go underground. It requires 500 million. But they're magnificent. You know, if they gave us the dividends in beautiful type 2 diamonds, it would be better.
Did you plow any money at all into the tech companies?
No. One small one, which my godson and nephew is doing. I don't understand it. I'm kind of with Buffett on this. I'm sorry I don't understand it. I wish I did. And I think there's two big areas that is going to happen. My daughter's kind of in this, in the biotech area. You know, she's the bat specialist.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and my son-in-law is a space weather expert. And I would have backed him. I think it's a brilliant idea. He watches sun flares. Yeah. And he can predict exactly when they're going to hit the Earth. And probably at this stage now, he's an astrophysicist. Where? And of course, they have a terrible job. They screw up your computers. They screw up air traffic control and all those kind of things.
And I think it affects the weather as well.
Totally. So yeah. He would have, and he can predict that. And he set up a small company with Jack, and we kind of invested a few bob in it called, I think it was Imagination Technologies, which was what it should be called. It's a great name. And he's academic. He's a director of Dublin Institute of Advanced Studies. He looks after the Dunsink and things
and
like that.
An even bigger brain than you.
A very different brain from me. Very different brain for me. So, but that was something that I thought had huge potential, and still do. It has potential.
But where is it?
No, he's much happier as an academic.
But we can't invest in that.
No, and I mean, and that would be algorithms.
Here I am taking my little notes.
I know, but
here,
you'd have to have algorithms, and you wouldn't understand them, and I certainly wouldn't understand them. And Emma's work, if she can get it to work, is longevity. And I've just finished reading a book called Ageless by a guy called Steele. And you can be sure that some of the billionaires now are already working on some of the things they're recommending. This guy believes, and Emma believes, is that aging is purely an illness. You get old, but you shouldn't age. Everything that's happening to me is preventable.
Well, I have to tell the story. One of the things that's preventable is until recently you were playing rugby until you got tackled.
Now you only have to see, look at the bits, look at the swollen fingers.
Tell the story.
About the rugby.
Yeah.
I came to it very late because I was a student. I was about 28. I got fit and took up rugby at about 29, 30. Played league now. The league and this particular thing was, this is the ninths. This is for one-legged blind men and people who are 60-something, yeah. And we wonderful fun. Useless. I mean, no skills. And played Golden Oldies till I was 68 and got tackled by a 20-something-year-old who nearly killed me.
Because I met you at a funeral shortly after that, and you were in absolute rag order.
I was for 18 months, complete snapped hamstring, 3 vertebrae in my neck, and a bad shoulder, all from one hit, because you shouldn't be there at 60.
Yes, exactly. And yet the big brain told you otherwise.
Oh, no, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Okay. In fact, I wasn't well last year, and there was supposedly an over 70s Golden Oldies taking place in Denver this year in June. And I spoke to the surgeon and I say, because I was reasonably fit now for my age. Don't dare go any further. And he says, yeah, I'll have you ready to play in June. And actually he would have if the thing fell apart, of course, because there could be no travel. Now, the over 70s is wonderful. If you can get 15 people from either side, firstly, you have to recognize your colleagues, which isn't that easy. And if you can stand on the field and walk, but you know what? It's good for our egos. You know, we still think we have it. We don't think very deeply about it. But we had Clontarf would have gone out there, 15 men and true, all wearing our gold shorts and purple shorts over 75.
Well, see, that's very posh.
You see, we can't be touched over 60. You can't be touched at all over 66 and over 70.
Except that somebody crocked you.
Yeah, he was 24. He shouldn't have done that.
Ah, okay.
He wasn't supposed to.
Listen, we're a business program, as I keep saying.
Yeah, sports program. Sorry about that. Yeah.
Keep telling me some of these ideas. I'm still waiting to hear the killer idea.
It would be aging, I think, is definitely one of them. Longevity.
And your daughter is.
She is working with bats.
Okay.
Bats.
And what
bats don't get bats don't get sick. She's been working for 15 years. The viruses don't get to bats. Their immune system rejects them completely.
Don't want to go down another little rabbit hole or a bat cave here. But wasn't it bats that started this whole COVID thing?
Yeah, it could, because they can have the virus, but it doesn't make them sick.
Ah, okay.
And whether it came from there or not, I don't know. It could have. And they've loads of other ones apparently too.
And is she trying to monetize?
She's trying to find out what's
this?
In there. Not remotely. She's a total academic. She's a UCD professor. Not remotely. Wouldn't occur to her. I think it occurs to her because she would be friendly with Luke O'Neill, and he's just made the odd couple of hundred million, so she thinks that's nice. And that there's going to be a lot more of that happening. But in this particular book, they look at about too many ideas as to what will increase aging. Things like metformin and rapamycin can increase your lifespan by 25% already. I mean, this is known. So you can be rest assured.
You're not trying to manufacture any of this stuff.
I can't get much further than figuring out what you can do from it. But, you know, rest assured, in 20 or 30 years, there'll be pills to help a lot of this kind of stuff. You have to, there was one I was reading about, and she's involved in it, where a phenomenal thing is they can take a cell from your ear, just one cell, put it into a dish and fiddle around with the four building blocks, CTAG, I think they are. I think that's what they are, but maybe not in that order. And they can turn it into a pluripotent cell. Are you aware of that? Your first cell for when the egg is fertilized, and they can make a whole person out of the ear cell.
No, I've never heard this.
They can do it. It's actually being done, and that's kind of a bit worrying, isn't it, as to where it's going to go?
It's boring, but. Isn't it a human condition? We always think of the worst.
I know.
It might be the best.
We think of the worst. But so certainly there will be, whole area of biotech is going to be huge. And this full marks of that couple in Germany that developed this thing, this mRNA technology, that's going to be wonderful in terms of delivery system. So the big thing we all want to do is kind of stay well, as much as stay long alive, stay well. And this is going to improve that dramatically.
Give me just another second and let's take another very brief break.
Looking for the best work-life balance? Why not start your new business life in one of Ireland's beautiful Gaeltacht locations? Údarás na Gaeltachta has created Ireland's biggest digital hub, G-Tech. High-speed broadband just for you. Hosail nóif nachtlat. Your new work-life awaits. Find out more at údarás.ie. You're listening to That Great Business Show. ThatGreatBusinessShow.com. Subscribe today to That Great Business Show on your favourite podcast platform, including Apple and Spotify.
And Dr. John Teeling is our special guest on That Great Business Show, episode 28. Continuing, Dr. John, with more great ideas. Bats, ears.
Bats is longevity, staying well with you. And it'll be artificial means of doing so. They will develop drugs or pills, or hopefully ones that you can take to fight a lot of the common situations that we have now.
What about other areas that you, you've obviously lived from the dial-up phone to the mobile phone, and we're probably going to see the end of cars in some fashion, and anything on that side of technology that you say, do you know what?
Anything that has big barriers to entry, and you might say, well, why'd you go into whiskey? Now it has big but not huge, and why do you go into mining? Because to build a mine is, you're talking about hundreds of millions, but what you do is you're finding something to sell it on. Never knew much. I think the whole car stuff is phenomenal. I mean, there will be driverless cars. What that means for the big car companies, I think they have to go like the railway companies, and they have to go like the canal companies.
Which is
obsolete. And what are they? I mean, a modern car is going to be a box with a computer in it. And that's Google.
Now, Mercedes-Benz, if I remember correctly, have spent an awful lot of money. I mean, they're just, to use your least favourite word, they have done the pivot, and they do see the world in the future as being a taxi firm. Not a, you know, they're manufacturing cars to be taxis.
Yeah, it could be easily. I mean, we don't know where, and that's going to change. Now, it'll be obviously take longer than we think. I have seen in the States, driverless cars going around San Francisco on a Sunday morning. Frightening. Nobody in them. It really was frightening. They did on a Sunday morning because there'd be nobody around downtown.
Except you.
I was looking at it. No, yeah, I don't sleep. You give up sleeping. And so they know that now, how fast they'll come in and what the technology will be. That plus electric cars, certainly that battle is lost.
And yet, if you, I mean, and I did, I used to have stockbroker types and analysts on a radio show that I used to present, and they used to say, oh, no, no, like cars, that's not going to happen for a long, long time.
Yes.
But it's, as you say.
This awful phrase again, the tipping point has happened. There is no doubt about that. Again, it's younger people. There's no point in me saying it. You ask me, why do young people drink brown spirits? Because they're young people and they think differently from me. And that's what they want to do. And likewise, they will want an electric car. They feel for the climate or for the planet. And good luck to them. They're the ones that are going to spend the money. And so you'll have to have offerings. Do they make a lot of sense at the moment? No. I was thinking of going from Clontarf up to Dundalk for a board meeting and back to the plant. And Stephen, who's going to drive me, he has an electric car. And he says, will it go that far? In other words, his range is 230 kilometres. You know, silly that you have to ask that question.
But the new Volkswagens are now doing 530 kilometres. So
I suppose if you go at 5 miles an hour, probably.
No.
I agree.
Every passing day is getting better and better.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's in the batteries. That's why you come back to your lithium and your cobalt. The new batteries, they haven't changed for 130 years. There has to be new technology on batteries.
Wider question. We're always trying to get people into business because I just love business and I think you love business. Would you tell people to get into business or are you going to tell them to?
Work actively. No, I have 7 grandchildren. 2 boys, the eldest is 14 and the Jack has 3 girls and Stephen has 2 girls. So there are 7 of them. Oh, yeah, I would strongly encourage them. Now, the answer is, of course, you encourage your grandchildren to do anything they want to do. But I would certainly not be averse to directing them to business. Absolutely. I mean, it's been fabulous. For those of us who've been, firstly, if you're lucky enough to be able to set up a business, and you know, you have to have, there are certain things you have to have. You have to have the vision. It's a great word. You have to have the idea and believe in the idea.
Is it easier now than it was when you were starting it?
You know, I wonder, is it?
I think
it's easier for me because I've done it a few times.
Yeah.
For the people doing it for the first time.
There were no Leos, the local enterprise offices. There were none of those grants, none of that.
Yeah, you still have to take the big jump. You have to believe in yourself.
Absolutely.
And you have to believe, and there has to be a market or even a future market that you can see. There's the critical thing. Can you get the resources? Yeah, maybe, but can you get the people? It's the technology. The resources are technology, people, and money. Money is only a small part of it, really. You've got to get the people. I've been always lucky to get the people. This rare earths in Saudi Arabia, I think now after 8 days looking at it, I think I would have a team. Again,
that's networking, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is. This case, totally networking. Yeah. Yeah.
You ask
somebody who asked somebody who asked somebody, says, I don't know the first thing about it, but I know somebody who did something. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, they'll go in. They love the job. There are people who just love to go and spend months in a desert. And that's what they want to do. So I can get that. Can you take the uncertainty and the problems? I would imagine that I don't like the word, it's the uncertainty rather than the risk. In a modern world where there's still internationalization, no matter what's happening just at the moment, competition might be able to get in much quicker than it was.
But if you reverse that, because you see, I think there's you've seen it, a fundamental change in the way that Irish people think about business. When you were starting out, there was no business. This place was the
violently anti-business.
Anti-business, but also nothing ever happened. There was no capital. There was no nothing, this, that, the other. And there certainly was no entrepreneurial view or it was a dirty word.
Very much.
Now, we have 250,000 SMEs. Everybody who listens to this show, they're listening to business. There are business programs on every radio station. There's business on the newspapers. There's business, business, business. I actually laughed because back in the day and I had Conor McEnroy on episode 15. You know Conor.
Yes.
Conor, I used to bring on to RTE radio on a Friday to fill the space because there was nothing happening. Fellas like you either down in the bar or the golf club or the whatever, playing rugby probably in your case. Come here to me, we're going off on another little tangent here.
Amazing
again.
That, yeah.
I was interested in this. Your ma sent you to UCD. She was nuts for education, though more for the status, you say, and contacts than the actual education is why you should go to college. or that you went to college. That's a quote from you.
Why you should go to, you must go. You must go to some form of third education. I am a passionate believer in the big universities, if you're lucky enough to be able to get
there. Will they last in the way that you and I know them, or...
evolve, but they will last.
I see UCD building more apartments,
yes,
which is, well, my head, bull. They'll all be doing it online. Everybody's doing it online.
You know,
they will.
That's no experience. No, I mean, I talked to Emma and Peter about it. Emma has given, she has labs in UCD because she's science, but she doesn't see the students. They have an appalling life. They've got to get together because, as you
very
know yourself...
different for lab-based work.
Yes, it is. But if you were doing commerce...
I would be able to look at you online.
Yeah, exactly. But you weren't able to go down to the student bar, play pool, have a few pints and talk about things.
But I was able to possibly have as much interaction as I would have had with you.
I'm not sure about that. I think, and I tell you, what I tried to do, and you're a very good example of it, is when I went into a class, I tried to be not outrageous, but try to get them to say, what kind of bullshit is that he's saying? So that when they came out of the class, they said, did you hear what your man was talking about? That's how you learn.
Early adopters, I still remember.
That's how you learn. You'd go down and down to the trap or wherever you went.
Yeah.
And they'd talk
Here's
about
one for
it.
You. Who created the trap?
I have no idea.
So you're talking to him.
There we are. Didn't I say the right thing? But I think that's what's missed. I think those who are staying in the apartments out in Belfield, they have to be talking. You can have whatever things you like. They have to meet each other.
Yeah.
Because,
but that'll be a different form. And in fact, that's another business.
Maybe how many people met their partners in the university?
Oh, maybe many, but come here to me. Back
Where
in
are
the
you
day,
meet a partner
back,
now?
Back in the day, and I'm going back hundreds of years back, there were coffee shops where people met and did business.
Yes.
So you could have your online lecture, just like watching TV or something, and then you can go down to your local coffee shop and have the chat.
I suppose that's a possibility. I don't see it. Whether or not you're going to have
that's a very gentle way of saying shut up.
No. I look at the big American universities, which are just spectacular, and they're getting stronger and stronger and stronger because they've more and more money. And
they'll market themselves to death as well.
Brilliant.
Very clever.
Just superbly good. But so many of their people have made so much money. This one-tenth of 1%, and they give it back. And that experience by itself, if nothing else, just to go and spend 4 years in the yard at Harvard or 4 years at the University of Pennsylvania, phenomenal experience. And you learn so much. Most business is kind of applied common sense and knowing where to find the information and how to network. And that's where you learn. And I really feel for the first years this year that have had a lousy sixth year and are having no first year now. Hopefully they can get back next year. It will be different, but I think that's where the real learning takes place. What you learn in the lectures is very small. I think probably some of mine very little. But they had to learn how to think now. I don't mean it as much as that, but how to say, well, look, does this open something? Should I look at something differently? That's all you want. You want them to question things.
Well, here's another one for you. You, by your own sweat, got scholarships all the way through.
Yes.
And you went and you did your MBA and your DBA and all. Nowadays, with that brilliant idea, whoever came up with it in the EU, the Erasmus.
Yes.
Like, I just find that phenomenal.
I agree.
And you, I think, are a huge believer in getting out off this island.
Yes.
Because we are teeny.
Both of those agree. I read recently, it's about 50 years old, the Erasmus. Somebody was saying they were on the first Erasmus program, I think, about 50 years ago.
It might have been the German, the fellow who invented it was that German chancellor, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's something like that. But it's a great
Adenauer,
program.
Maybe.
But again, you want to see different views because, as you know, certainly now, when I came up and went to college, almost nobody did. We thought we were the best at everything. We were the most beautiful. I never forget, we thought we had the most beautiful air hostesses. I've got to be very careful here. And that our airline was the best in the world and our agriculture was the best. You still hear the farmers saying it's the best in the world. That's all bullshit. Yeah.
Go on.
It isn't. So, but we only talk to ourselves.
Yeah.
And now when you go over there and you suddenly walk across, say, at the campuses of one of the Ivy Leagues, you just say, mother of God, what am I doing here? And it's a new world and they are different in the classes.
But they also, going back to your airline or your best farmers and all, you get great, brilliant business people in Ireland who said, we're not good enough. Ed Harty, I don't know whether you know Dr. Ed Harty of Dairymaster, who has set up a massive world operation from down at the base of Kerry there. And you had the whole Kerry group.
Oh, phenomenal.
Like
out of it.
Guys, brilliant ideas.
A caravan in Listowel.
Yeah. And that came from seeing the outside and saying, you know what, we could do that.
Yes, we can.
And a little bit better.
Yes. And indeed, there's nothing wrong with copying a brilliant idea and adapting it. And yet then you wonder, where did the very innovative ideas come? And we have to be very careful, because most of the very, very good innovative business ideas, not inventions necessarily, but innovations, are still coming from the US.
Why is that?
You know what? I really don't know. I wonder, is it because of the culture? And this is why when Silicon Valley is kind of falling a bit apart now, you hope for the future of that. It used to be places like Route 128 in Boston, which has come back again.
What was that? I'm not familiar.
Route 128
with that.
Was the first MIT, Harvard, those areas. It was a road, and all the 50 years ago, the Intel's in this. Well, the Intel set up and the other side, but a lot of the med tech at that particular stage set up out of MIT and Harvard, and because you had the brains to think about it. Talking to Emma just in the last few days about that, you need a common room, and she does, because she's dealing with this weird thing. And if she's working on her own, and yet if she goes in and has a cup of coffee with somebody, she says, what are you doing? He says, well, did you ever think of the following?
Yeah.
You can't, yeah. I don't see how you have that online, though she disagreed with me, because she'd been on a Zoom call with a few different people, and she was putting forward something, and somebody actually did, a medical doctor said, have you thought of the following? And she hadn't. So it kind of worked to that extent. But I think it's just a life experience, just the interactions. Me, even in Ireland, if you can meet, you know, as you saw today, for me to find my way to Dundrum Shopping Centre was extremely difficult.
His first time in Ireland's largest shopping centre.
It's on the south side. And I'm lost in the bloody car parks, and you'll have to bring me back to my car. I'll never find it.
We'll get you
back. It's about level minus 16 green.
Wave your magic wand for me and tell me, because I know that you've got so many views
this is terrible. You should know a bullshit. But go on.
What could the government, should the government do bigger, better, brighter for Ireland Inc.?
That's not fair, because I think you know my view is...
Oh, I know you have many views.
No, I have a plague on all politicians.
Yes.
An absolute plague on them. I think what they have to do is they have to govern. They have to lead. And I don't think we have any leaders at the moment. I mean, real, genuine leaders. I think the problem with the politicians is the politicians first and governors, if you like, second. I think that's really very sad. I'm not so sure it's an awful lot different in the US, but here I think it's pathetic at the moment. As a plague on all their houses. I'm not political at all. I am appalled that they allow unelected so-called experts to run the country, which is what they're doing at the moment. And my view, sorry if there are any civil servants listening.
There are many.
I think what they're doing at the moment, the whole screw up in Europe is committees. Committees decide, and committees decide nothing. The committee designed the unicorn. Remember that very old thing you would have learned? They were trying to design a horse and got a unicorn. You can't have it. So I would like to see a leader who wants to lead. He can be forceful, but at least lead. And we certainly do not have it here and haven't had for some time.
And that neatly brings me also to the idea that you mentioned at that IIBN event of, you don't believe in co-founders either, do you?
No.
Expand this, I'm sure you
don't
used to
believe
say
in a couple of things. And I'm very kind of clear on this. And this gets me into all kinds of trouble. I don't believe in social entrepreneurship. I really don't believe in that at all. Though a nun who had 500 people working somewhere in Leitham and Longford at an event tore strips off me over this.
But it works for specific. There's a lovely woman called Isolde Ward who runs Food Cloud. And she,
yeah, it's a great project.
Yeah. But why do you not?
I think it has to be the... And why do I not believe in co-founders? There has to be one person who's his or her belief, absolute focus. And you've met them. When you see them, it comes out of their eyes. They can't think of anything else. They're going to move heaven and earth, and probably will have to move heaven and earth. You know, when it's the kid's birthday party and there's a burst pipe, you've got to go. There's no point saying, I can't go till Monday, I'm not working. You can't switch off on the weekends. I mean, we haven't been vaccinating 7 days a week because, oh God, you couldn't ask the civil servants to work on Saturday. You couldn't possibly.
I don't think the vaccines are there, and I do
agree
with you.
Well, stop. Don't get me there now. We'll never finish. But you know what I mean. It's just a different belief. So I think it requires one boss. Now, you can have other, and there are other co-founders, but there's one absolute believer in the Holy Grail and is bringing the other, has followers with him. I don't think you have that in social enterprise. You are trying to achieve something. Money is a counter, remember. Money is a way of adding up. Did I do well? It's not an end in itself. It really isn't. And the longer I go, will I take the money? Yeah, of course. Is it good if you make more rather than less? Yes, it is. But that's not the reason for trying to do it. You're trying to build something. Now, I have great, as I don't remember what that nun's name was. She had some social enterprise and she was doing great and she was really very good and argued with me too well, in fact. That's why I remember her over all the years I did this. But to me, you focus on the one person. Somebody is in at home tonight in their room saying, you know, maybe spend up all night dreaming up something, trying to do something and putting it together. Their baby, it's exactly like having a baby. And you grow it up to a big adult and then they take it off you some of the time as well.
Was it worth it?
Oh, God. Of course it's worth it. Absolutely. I've been blessed. Now, I have been blessed. I have to say I've been very lucky, which I think you need to be a bit lucky. I think because of my background, I was never going to be very good working for anybody else. I think everybody says that.
Yeah, but you just said because of my background, but I've read your background. It was not that easy, but it wasn't dissimilar to so many others.
Yeah.
Why would that make you different?
I had the opportunities, blessed by my mother when I was 14 or 15. She let me run a company and the joy of that was because she knew less than me. That's the only reason I knew.
And there was survival involved.
Oh, absolute survival involved. Mm-hmm. She worked very hard for it. But you learned that and... I learned at that stage, which I still have, absolute self-confidence. I'm like De Valera. When he wanted to see how Ireland was going to do, he looked into his own heart. Well, I have to do the same thing. And if I make mistakes, and I have, he asked me about failures. I made mistakes. And do I worry about them? No, I tend not to look. You say, well, geez, I shouldn't have done that. Of course you say that. But that's not a reason for not going on. But yeah, back to yours, try to focus on the question. Oh, yeah, it's a great life. I'd strongly recommend. That's why for my 7 grandchildren, yeah, if they show any kind of aptitude, I've one already, I think, well, 1 or 2 maybe already. Now, the others are tiny. So I may wait till they're 4. They don't have to decide before they're 4.
Will you start any other new projects now?
That is a good question. If you'd have asked me the same question 10 years ago when I was, say, 65, I would have said, I don't know. Now that I'm 75, I'm not worried about the fact that they might take 5 or 10 or 15 years out.
You're going to eat bat blood or something anyway.
Something like that, if I can get it. The answer is yes, but nobody has offered it to me yet. And if the opportunities... Probably in the areas I'm in. I really liked the idea, as you heard me talk about, of something in Canada, because I think it's going to be quite big. Now, not in the lunatic stuff, just in regular business.
I forgot to mention, when you were mentioning cannabis, is that Fergus Kerrigan has a farmer down in Wicklow who is growing his cannabis. Yeah,
There are a couple of thousand acres now growing hemp. They grow hemp because cannabis is illegal. You can't the legislation's a mess. They'll get it right.
Politicians do get it right. You just said it.
I said they will get it right. It'll be more error than trial. But they'll get there eventually. And I would never say no that I wouldn't. Would I be front and centre? Maybe taking the idea, say, yeah, look, I'll put it together and you come with me. I think the possibility of the rare earths in Saudi would be quite an interesting one. I wouldn't mind going and funding that and putting it together. I would lead the team. Now, I'm not going out to spend a month in the desert, nor even a day probably in the desert, even though the Saudis probably do it in air-conditioned. But the answer is I wouldn't say no. Talk to me hopefully in 10 more years and we'll see if there's anything new. I think the whiskey has a long way to go yet, but I'd like to see Jack and Stephen take a bigger role in the Great Northern, which is family owned.
Does it tickle you that there is a brand out there called Teeling?
I have beyond respect for Jack's idea. That was his idea. I never had the confidence. Isn't it a weird thing to say?
But you just told me you were full of confidence.
I have never had the confidence to see that I would succeed in developing a brand. I think developing a brand in America is a massive ask. And Jack has done that. Now, he's done it with the support of Bacardi, and they've ploughed a lot of money into it.
Because they obviously believe they're not doing it for because they want to see Teeling.
They want to notch out a brand. But in terms of brand recognition now in the States, I never achieved that in Cooley because we never put the money in. I took the gamble. I would suspect Jack has spent far more money trying to develop Teeling brand in the US than he has on his distillery or his inventories. And so the height respect, as I say, I never had the confidence I could do it. I think, and it may be, well, McGregor's McGregor. It's just so different. It's phenomenal and has a way to go.
Well, he just sold out. Did you see that?
I saw. I most certainly saw that. He's probably got $250 million for 5 or 6 years. But the opportunities for that brand in the parts of the world, they're only rolling it out now into Eastern Europe, into Asia. I was in a hotel in Ras Al Khaimah, one of the Emirates, one morning up early because you didn't sleep. And the only kid working in the breakfast room was a trainee from Tamil Nadu. And I talked to him. I was the only one there. Wife had more sense. She was asleep. I got talking to him and he told me he'd only been there training. And when I said Ireland, he says, Conor McGregor, do you know him? Unbelievable. yet, he was a Tamil, a Hindu. I don't know if he drank it. Well, he probably hadn't any money anyway. And yet it was there. And I think his fights now are in Dubai, aren't they? I think he's fighting in Dubai, his next fight. There's a big part of the world out there. You have all of Asia to conquer for whiskey.
Oh, sorry, you are right. Or they were going to be there because of various
If you look now, if you ask me for why, I think the opportunity in whiskey is much bigger now than it was when we started. Because, you know...
The Great Northern will trundle along big. We'll just brand again.
No. Yeah. We'll have other people to do it. I'll make for them. Yeah. I think it'll grow and it needs to be in Africa, west and east, and it needs to be in Asia. Big ask, but it'll get there. But other people will do the heavy lifting on the marketing side of it. But it could grow quite big.
When you wrote your thesis, was that 1970?
75 it was finished. The research started in 1771.
I'd never read it, obviously. I shouldn't say obviously.
Haven't either.
What did it say that you could achieve with it?
Remember, my thesis was on the evolution of industrial development. I started off looking at it, which was my strongest belief, is industrial development policies in Ireland, and it was to try and promote Irish entrepreneurship. It ended up as a study of foreign investment in Ireland and how it had evolved over time. And I thought the IDA would have more trouble than they had. They've done an absolutely magnificent job, repeatedly, against all the threats that keep coming at them. And they see them...
This is now a final question because we will have to end. Speaking of threats, you saw that Biden is trying to bring in this 21% across the board tax. Is that a big doo-doo load going to drop on Ireland?
I think it is another obstacle. I think that tax lawyers are so good now in the world that they'll do it, and that we would. But I'd have to say, after 50 years looking at the IDA, they fought off problems as big as this, and the other attractions are good here. So they'll do all right in it. It's been very successful.
Good. And that is also it from That Great Business Show, episode 28. Station boss Peter Rice, chief sound engineer and self-confessed whiskey aficionado, was delighted to have met with his hero, John Teeling.
I should have brought a bottle. I know.
We'll probably sound exceptionally great now. Big congrats to Team GBS members Hannah Rickson, whose Clare-based firm Get the Shift has been bought by FRS Recruitment. You can listen back to Hannah's business stories and what she told us she was going to do after recording the podcast on episode 8, that was. She was going out for the night and it was very funny. And our pals at the Kerry-based 3D printers WASP, WAZP, who were with us on episode 10, have been in touch to tell us that designers and engineers can now download 3D solutions directly from something called Spark, an initiative they've just launched to create the world's largest repository of 3D printable content for clients. That's another one, John Teeling, that's going to be huge. 3D printing.
Yes, it is. Couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely. Should have mentioned that, yeah.
Well, as usual, if you know any other great businesses that deserve to be highlighted on thatgreatbusinessshow.com, go straight to the website and click that Share Your Story button. Finally, our thanks to our sponsor, De Facto Shave. Try their world's best shaving oil for a week, and I swear you will never go back to the horrid old shaving foam. Buy it online now. Tell me what you think. And I've just given a bottle or two to John Teeling, courtesy of De Facto, so we'll ask John Teeling whether he feels all smooth after his shave in the morning. That is it from me, Conal O'Moran. We will talk again next week on the Slán Tunnel.